This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. The European Union says it will act after President Trump imposed 25% tariffs on all steel and aluminum imports to the United States. The European Commission's executive vice president called it economically counterproductive, but the president said Monday,
"It's time for our great industries to come back to America. I want them back to America."
He also demanded Hamas release all hostages by the weekend, saying he was speaking for himself, not Israel. The Trump administration and Elon Musk continue to clash with judges who hamper their plans to shrink the size of the federal government. One federal judge extended the hold on the Trump administration's buyout offer to federal workers. The Justice Department's ordered federal prosecutors to drop corruption charges against New York City Mayor Eric Adams, saying it inhibits him from helping the administration crack down on illegal immigration. And Vice President J.D. Vance at an AI summit criticized excessive AI regulation. This is ABC News. Check your cupboards for some potentially tainted tuna. Canned tuna sold under several labels, including Trader Joe's, Van Camp's, and Genova, all being recalled after problems showed up with the seals on the cans. There are concerns that it could lead to food poisoning. The latest art exhibit at the Denver airport may look a little familiar.
If you're flying through Denver International Airport, take some time to view the latest art installation, a colorful sculpture using a universal travel staple known around the world, luggage. The art exhibit is titled "It's Not What You Take, It's What You Bring Back," and features 183 pieces of upcycled luggage painted in bright primary colors hung from the ceiling. The artist, Thomas Evans, known as Detour, specializes in large-scale public art. Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
A Super Bowl record as new numbers now show an average of 126 million people across the U.S. watch Sunday's game. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Donald Trump is president again, and Democrats need to take a new approach to combat this presidency. Part of that is recognizing the realignment of how we arrived here. In last year's election, one thing Trump did successfully was turn out people who might not otherwise vote. In Wisconsin, he increased his vote share in all 72 counties en route to the largest popular vote total in state history. How did he do this? Well, as I see it, there are two factions of Republicans. One is the more traditional country club Republicans. The other is the newer group, what I'm calling the pro-wrestling Republicans. In my latest column, I wrote about how Donald Trump transformed the party by prioritizing the pro-wrestling Republicans, and why recognizing this new reality is critical to Democrats' ability to grab a steel chair of their own and fight back. Subscribe and read it now at the Recombobulation Area.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
The Bucks bow to Golden State. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks losing at home to the Golden State Warriors, 125-111. Stephon Curry led Golden State with 38 points, the most he's had all season. Jimmy Butler had 20 and 9 rebounds in his second game for the Warriors since being traded from the Heat. Damian Lillard also had 38 points in the loss.
I thought we didn't execute well enough out of that, you know, the screening, slipping, getting the guys involved that we wanted to get involved. We didn't do it consistent enough. And then, you know, it was still a close game. Loose balls, they got to them. You know, we allowed them to get off threes. You know, they got a lot of shooters, and I thought they separated themselves getting threes off, second opportunities. And then, obviously, the turnovers. You know, I felt like I had more turnovers than I ever had in a game today. So you're not going to win a game not valuing every possession against a team that's shooting the ball like that.
That's the Bucks' Damian Lillard. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. What better time to announce new concert dates than after a couple billion people saw your Super Bowl halftime performance? Kendrick Lamar is doing just that as he announced new dates of his grand national tour, where he will be joined by SZA, who also joined him for part of the show at Super Bowl 59. The tour starts in April and tickets go on sale as early as this coming weekend. One of the great things about being homesick is you get to catch up on TV to the point where you're sick of it. But the least I could do is pass along a recommendation or two. If you like a good thriller, check out Don't Move. The film is directed by Sam Raimi and is about a girl who faces becoming completely incapacitated after being drugged as she tries to escape a predator in the woods. The film is only an hour and a half long and constantly moves. Really solid new film from Sam Raimi that you can check out on Netflix. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Peach Waba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Partly cloudy and kind of cold today. We'll get to around 10 for a high this afternoon with wind out of the north at 5, and that'll keep the wind chill hovering either side of zero here for most of the day. Tonight, mostly cloudy, 3 above. Tomorrow, some snow, maybe an inch, with a high near 15. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 6.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, many areas in Milwaukee are considered a food desert. That's why there's the mobile market. You'll find out how you can use it yourself. Join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10. This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
Good morning, Wisconsin. This is Dr. Kristen Lyerly with Greg Bach on the board. We are Bach in the dock, and we are so excited. It's Tuesday morning in February in Wisconsin. It's really cold, too. I don't know if you've looked at the temperatures, but I just peeked at the temperature in Hayward, and it is literally, it's minus 20 air temperature.
Ooh. It's 19 down here in the southern region of Racine Radio Park.
Isn't that wild? That's a 40-degree difference from the northern part of the state to the southern part of the state.
Yeah, every time Pat does the temperatures, we're always usually the highest by a good degree.
You're the hot spot.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So I'm Dr. Kristen Lyerly. I have a regular guest here with Pat Kreitlow, but Pat's on vacation. I mean, talk about a hot spot. He has his toes in the sand.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
I know. I did, on my weather app, have a leftover, like, city that I visited earlier this winter, and I accidentally glanced, and it's 78 degrees there.
Yeah.
This is the time. Take a vacation.
Oh, do it. I mean, honestly, I feel like, you know, America, we could... Yeah, the latter part of January, we could just shut down, it all down and be like, you know what, on vacation, just hang a sign at all the airports saying closed. Come back in February.
There's something I think about being in Green Bay, maybe because we're such a football town that you wait until the Super Bowl is over and then all of a sudden winter really sets in.
Because so there's nothing to do, yeah.
Right. Although, you know, to be honest, like it's starting to get lighter out, you know, sunset is after 5 o'clock now. We're having longer days. It should be getting warmer at some point. I mean, there's hope on the horizon.
We'll hold that hope for Brittany Merlot, who will tell us because she can. The most she'll tell us is 10 days ahead of time. After that, she's like, you're on your own. Fine. If you want to say on the 11th day, it's going to be 80 degrees, but I will not. I will not stamp that with my meteorology approval.
I do love Brittany's weather. And I love too. How she delivers it because she's just got this like, I could just listen to it. She could be telling me a story about like, I don't know, toenail fungus. And I'd be like, oh.
Yes, indeed. You're right. If I keep picking at it, it won't go away. I love that she uses and since I've heard her for the first time, whenever it was like a year and a half ago. She's the only meteorologist I've ever heard use the word flirt in her forecast. We'll be flirting with some 30-degree weather. I'm like, yeah, we will. We'll be totally flirting. We'll be getting...
That's the key. Yeah. She's descriptive. Exactly. She uses like really colorful words that light up your imagination.
We'll give those warm temperatures some batty eyes.
All right. We do have Brittany later today in the next hour. And you know what? As I said earlier, we are back in the dock. We've got another dock joining us.
What?
In the 7 o'clock hour.
Bach and the Docks. Love it.
Again.
Love it.
Just like yesterday.
Love it.
So this doc is a doctor of physical therapy.
Okay.
Colleen Nowak is she's a Motherhood for Good ambassador. She is a candidate for DePere School Board, and she's going to join us around 7:30 to share her really cool, inspirational story about citizen activism, how she just identified a problem and worked together with folks, and now here she is running for school board.
Fantastic. Love it. Love it.
Yeah. Pretty cool. We've got other really good stuff coming up this week. We've got, just in a few minutes, Kate Duffy, talk about Motherhood for Good extravaganza. Kate's going to join us in our next segment to talk about postpartum Medicaid extension, which is getting a hearing tomorrow in the Senate. And this is cool. This is a real opportunity for us here in Wisconsin.
I mean, it's us in Arkansas.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I saw a map that had all the states, and we had a light color. I can't remember what the light color was, but it showed that there were hearings, whereas Arkansas is just nothing's happening there.
Well, we actually passed an extension from 60 days. So we'll get into this
in the next segment. Yeah.
But yeah, we actually passed an extension at one point that is sitting with the feds right now, but they want full extension in order to approve it. So it's this whole complex dance. Yeah. But what we need to know is what Kate's going to share in the next segment.
Kate's always great on the show. Bringing the thunder, bringing the heat. If you don't already follow Motherhood for Good on Instagram, those are some great posts.
She and her group of moms are on fire, and they get it. They understand what's at stake right now. They are motivated. Mm-hmm. That, you know, like me, you can't look your child in the eye knowing that the world is experiencing so much tumult. You can't just, let it happen. You got to be part of it.
Mm-hmm. And Alicia Saunders on the live stream says, wow, you have a bunch of my favorite ladies hanging out today.
Hey, good morning, Alicia. Alicia and I went to Kripwani yesterday and spent some time in a listening session with some of our representatives.
Wow. Okay. Look at you just not stopping the work.
Oh, dude, we've got so much more to talk about. So let's talk more about what's happening the rest of the week.
Okay.
So tomorrow we've got Mark Becker coming in. He, of course, is the host of Civic Media's Rational Revolution. We're going to talk all morning with a focus on small business in the state. Michelle Tressler, the co-founder of Hinterland, is going to be joining us in the 6 o'clock hour. And then Andrea Fanta, the founder of Mommy AF. You've seen those stickers.
I've seen those stickers. Okay. When you see bumper stickers, sometimes you like to think, is this a political statement? What statement is? Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure if Mommy AF was like keep your vaccinations and your public school away from my children.
Right.
You know, like
me too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But now I know. I mean, it's and hey, it's just about being, as Mark Becker would say, rational. Good discussion.
Yes.
But with bumper stickers, you're always like, what are you trying to tell me? With bumper, what are you trying to tell me with your bumper sticker? What are you trying to get me to vote for? It's usually nothing.
You're right. You're right. Well, and it's not just Mommy AF. There's Daddy AF and Grandpa AF. And there's a whole AF community out there.
Is there Dog Daddy AF? Mm.
You know, if there's not.
Because I'm not a Faja.
We know who could make that sticker for you.
Darn right.
And start that movement. Oh my gosh. And then on Thursday is going to be so good. We're dedicating the whole day to women leaders in Wisconsin. Women Win Wisconsin. Renee Peplum from Kewaunee is going to be joining me. We've got Senator Jody Havish-Sinikin coming on, Representative Margaret Arney, and maybe a special guest or two will pop in.
What?
I know. We're going to culminate on Thursday with this big show. And then I got to hand it back over to Todd on Friday.
No, you don't. No, you don't. No, you don't. From my cold living hand, because it's just cold out. Yeah. No. Todd is going to be fun. I love working with Todd as well. You guys are great to work with in the morning. It's a lot of energy, a lot of good times, a lot of, having great conversations. It's wonderful. So I'm happy to be on the ride.
Yeah. Well, Todd's a great guy. Yeah. Speaking of cold, though, let's run down some temperatures across the state.
Must we?
It's cold. Yeah. Okay. I know. It's now 21 degrees below zero in Hayward.
Like just 21 below zero.
Yeah. That's what that little minus means, right?
Well, it's minus I was thinking temperature versus wind chill.
Yeah, that's the air temperature.
Oh my God.
I know. Tony, if you're out there, bundle up, buddy. I know.
Everyone bundle up.
Yeah. Well, Amory, so I gave you the cold one. Amory's minus 13.
Okay.
And then Eau Claire, minus 3. See, as we're getting further south. Yep. Wausau, minus 1. Wisconsin Rapids is 2. We're in the positives there. La Crosse at 6 degrees. Milwaukee, 17.
And here, a balmy 19 degrees. Oh, nope. 17 degrees and cloudy. Feels like this is the part I don't like. Your phone does this. It's 17 degrees and cloudy. Feels like 5. Oh.
Yeah. I don't want to know that.
Yeah. So. But you know what? We're pushing. We're pushing through. We're pushing through. We're almost at the middle of the month. We're making it through. And then it'll be March, and it's unpredictable. We'll have a day where it's nice and warm and rainy. Then the next day it will snow. We don't know. And then April will be fine.
And all of a sudden, the grass will be green.
Yep.
Boom.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thanks for coming in and joining in on Weather Talk this morning. yeah, you know, you're always welcome to join our spicy conversation at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. You can also use the Civic Media app or leave a comment on Civic Media's YouTube page. Hey, Greg, yeah. Have you voted yet?
I have not. I was going to vote yesterday, and I totally blanked out. I'm going to either vote today or I'm going to vote tomorrow. But I'm going to vote early because it's very easy and very simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sure is. And we all have something on our spring primary ballot this year because the state superintendent of schools mm-hmm. is up this year. So there's a choice to be made there, as well as there are lots of local municipalities that have other elections. I know here in Green Bay, we've got a school board election, just lots of other things going on. So if you want to know what's on your ballot, mm-hmm. really easy, go to myvote.wi.gov. Everything you need to know is right there.
Wonderful. I love myvote.wi.gov. It's so simple. And you can also, if you order, you can order early ballots. I don't think you can now because we're very close to the election, but you can order early ballots. You can track those ballots. You can do so much in that website. It is so functional. And one of the most important things you can do in that website is find who represents you, from your dog catcher to your president. And all of those have phone numbers. And we want you to contact them and tell them what you feel about the job they're doing, and always being respectful and nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That is the point of representative government, mm-hmm. right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So before we bust into our first break and then welcome Kate, I just wanted to do a quick rundown of sports because this is important stuff.
Yeah.
The Bucks played Golden State last night. And if I remember your prediction from yesterday, Golden State not doing so well.
No.
Steph Curry struggling. Yeah, he had a season high 38 points last night, and the Bucks lost 125-111.
You really took me on a ride there, Dr. Lively. I had no idea where you were going. And then you're like, nope, the Bucks are still. And the thing is like, oh, they're fifth. I'm like, fifth? That doesn't sound good.
Yeah.
Well,
I know.
Pushing through.
Yes, but on the upside.
Yeah.
Pitchers and catchers report to spring training tomorrow.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. I can't wait. Mm-hmm. Baseball's almost here. Thank goodness.
Mm-hmm. It's just another sign of spring. And here in Green Bay, it's day 2 of the 2025 preseason, 72 days till the NFL draft, which yeah. we're all abuzz about. And then ESPN reports that the Packers are number 7 in the early NFL power rankings.
There you go. Ooh, okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, there we go.
It's a good time. Yeah. So we're going to pick it up with Kate Duffy in just a couple of minutes here. And we're going to talk about how you can get involved in saving moms' lives right here in our own backyard. Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. After 22 years as a commissioner and chair of the Federal Election Commission, Ellen Weintraub was purportedly sacked by President Donald Trump with this terse sentence: "You are hereby removed as a member of the Federal Election Commission, effective immediately." But as with several of Trump's recent actions, it's not legal. Weintraub may have made Trump's enemies list when she and another commissioner issued a statement in 2021 after the FEC's three Democrats and three Republicans deadlocked, subsequently dropping the campaign finance violation complaint resulting from Trump's $130,000 payment to porn star Stormy Daniels. Weintraub and then FEC Chair Shayna Broussard said after the dismissal, the commission therefore did not have enough votes to pursue well-grounded charges that the former president of the United States knowingly and willfully accepted contributions nearly 5,000% over the legal limit to suppress a negative story mere days before Election Day. The Campaign Legal Center's Trevor Potter, himself a former FEC chair, said in a statement, "In claiming to fire a commissioner of the Federal Election Commission, the president violates the law, the separation of powers, and generations of Supreme Court precedent. As the only agency that regulates the president, Congress intentionally did not grant the president the power to fire FEC commissioners." In a post on X, Weintraub vowed to continue her work on the commission. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Every story matters, and the Civic Media Radio Network is celebrating Black History Month by honoring the powerful stories of Wisconsin's own trailblazers.
Looking at the road that was laid before me.
From civil rights to business.
Food and like food trucks is just like a cool atmosphere.
Science to music.
Speaking of which, this is where I spit. Express sentiment, a lot of cats on here.
I'm Terry Barr, inviting you to join us right here for inspiring stories all month long.
You're listening to the Talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
Welcome back to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley here with Greg Bach. We are back in the dock filling in for Pat Kreitlow, who's going to be back on Monday. This song, Paula Abdul, first number one hit on this day in 1989. This is how I was feeling last night when I went to a listening session with my reps. Like, straight up, now tell me. I didn't get that.
You should have had that up, like, at a boombox on your shoulder, just walking out the room.
Wearing tights and leotards and the whole big hair thing too, by the way. That's
don't give her any ideas. I wouldn't put that past her.
And my hair. Can I get a perm? Can I please get a perm? I always wanted a perm.
Doctor, of course you can. Of course you can.
Yeah. That other voice that you're hearing, that is the extraordinary Kate Duffy from Motherhood for Good. She popped in this morning to give us a little update on what's happening with postpartum Medicaid in the state. Kate, welcome and good morning.
Good morning. It's been a minute since I've been on Up North News Radio, I think since, you know, just before the election in November. So happy to be back. This is a little earlier than my normal spot. So I'm still in my first cup of coffee. I may be a calmer version than what people are used to.
You'll be calm for starters. But as we get into this stuff, I think that that's going to change.
Yes. Yes. Oh, my gosh. And yeah, so I've been pushing pretty hard and a lot of folks within Motherhood for Good on this postpartum Medicaid advantage, which is, I'm sure, something you're very familiar with too. And I know you've worked really hard on as well. Seeing as we are one of now only two states that has not expanded postpartum Medicaid to 12 months, we're still at 60 days. And I've been watching it for the past couple of years, watching the ticker go down. It's like, because it was first introduced to states in 2021 as something that they could adopt at a 90% fund rate to help postpartum moms in their state. And we saw as state by state by state by state took the deal and they're like, oh yeah, why wouldn't we do that? And now we're down to two states, Wisconsin and Arkansas, that have not done this.
And why is this important? I mean, what happens with Medicaid right now in Wisconsin, and what would this change for moms and families?
Yeah, so Medicaid is, you know, part of our program to help low-income people who need healthcare. And right now, when moms have a baby, the baby can be on it for the first year, but the moms can only be on it for 60 days postpartum. And for anybody who has had a child knows that 60 days is not there's definitely not a magic wand that somebody waves and then you're all better. I wish we could do legislation to do that, because that would be amazing. But unfortunately, that is not
the case. That would be out of a job.
Yeah. A lot of things happen after that. And, you know, we live in a country where maternal mortality, unfortunately, is much higher than it should be. And having access to healthcare directly impacts how well people are and how many lives we can save. And I think we had like just around 50 deaths last year in the state within a year of that postpartum date. And trying to, this is something easy that we can do to help those moms just have access to care for the first year of their life. And I'm sure you could talk a little bit more about like all of the different medical things that can come up that first year, but also it's so bipartisan in a time where almost nothing is bipartisan. It was approved by so many people in the last session, but never got to the floor for a vote. And it actually got reintroduced by Republicans this session, and has a ton of Republican co-sponsors and Democratic co-sponsors.
It's actually the Republicans who are really pushing it. You know, like you said, we've got what's the name of the sponsor out of Weston who introduced this bill, the assembly rep. I'll come up with it. He has been out stumping for this, as has Jesse Rodriguez. I mean, they are very much out in the press talking about the need for this. You know, most women who die related to their pregnancy die in the postpartum period. And you said 50 women. We think that 80% of these deaths are preventable. We could save 80% of these women who die in the United States if we can get them access to care. And that's what this is all about. And to hear, to know that this is bipartisan, bicameral, they are working together like they work together in no other way. And it's not just our legislators. It's the coalitions of groups coming together. It's the Catholics. It's the anti-choice groups. It's the OBGYN doctors. I mean, everybody wants this except
Robin Voss. Da-da-da. He, you know, is almost proud about not supporting this. He has talked, he has said that it's likely not going to come for a vote. He has said, quote unquote, that when asked about it, that we just give away too much free stuff. He also said recently that his caucus in general is not a fan of welfare programs. Which is just, you know, there's conservative and then there's cruel. And I think, you know, we're seeing a lot of conservatives and Republicans supporting this because they know that it makes sense. And not only does it make sense from a moral or healthcare perspective, it actually makes sense financially as well. It is not a huge investment. And in the states that have already adopted this, they're seeing that it actually saves money because when people don't have access to healthcare and then they need it and they can't afford it, then that ends up putting more onus on the state to pay for things as well. So it's exactly a smart decision all around.
Yeah. I mean, we count the number of people who die, but for every person who dies, there are 100 people who are harmed, and many are permanently harmed. And this is physical health, mental health, things that impact families and whole communities. So this is a real opportunity. There's going to be a hearing tomorrow in the Senate. Are you going?
Yes, I am going to go. I need to check the snow, but I am planning on being there. So there's a hearing in the Senate. If you can get to Madison, we would love if you could come too and testify in favor of this bill. If you go to our Instagram, Motherhood for Good, in our recent posts, we also have ways of how you can submit testimony if you cannot come. And the Senate is not really going to be the problem, although we don't anticipate that to be the problem. But we also really need Representative Voss to, or Speaker Voss to call to the floor to the assembly for a vote as well. So we're encouraging everybody to call their senator and representatives to make sure they're co-sponsoring.
Hey, I love that call to action, because so many of us are feeling frustrated and like we want to do something, and this is something that's easy to get behind. So say it again, Kate, what can people do?
Try to come to the hearing if you can. If you can't, call your state senator and state representative and ask them to co-sponsor legislation to expand postpartum Medicaid, and that'll be great.
Yeah, we'll save lives.
Yeah.
We'll save moms' lives.
And you'll hear your Republicans say, oh, we already support it, which is great.
It's fabulous. Kate, thanks for jumping on with us this morning. Thank you for the work that you do. You're incredible.
Thank you so much. You too.
All right. We'll be back in a couple minutes. I'm Kristen Lyerly, Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, LaCrosse's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Wisconsin's trying to get a little bit more organized when it comes to connecting schools to farms. I'm Pam Yonke, starting you off before the opening bell on a Tuesday morning. Quick look at what's happening in agribusiness news. David Lee Schneider from O'Connell County can tell you about it. He's a diversified farmer himself. He also has been appointed to the Department of Public Instruction to work on the Farm to School program. He says Wisconsin got a federal grant to build a database of farms and schools to try to connect the two. He explains how he hopes it will be used.
Who can use that is farmers, schools, and anyone on the public as well. They can go on there and see one of their local farmers and say, hey, I'd like to pick up some carrots or something, let me contact them. So the information for the farmers there, like the name, the email address, phone number, what products they have, what months they have those products available, do they have trucking, do they have liability insurance, and the school's information is also there. So if I was a school food service director, I was in need of, say, turkey, I could look up on there, find local turkey from a local farmer, and call them and contact them and make a deal, or vice versa. If I was a farmer, I put my turkeys on there, and then hopefully the school or the public would call.
David Lee Schneider from O'Connell County, a farmer himself, now working through his appointment on the Department of Public Instruction to connect schools with their local farmers' sources. Markets in overnight electronic trade this morning. Dairy looks good. Everything else a little cool. Numbers are next.
Giving back, it's at the heart of the Wisconsin farmer, and it starts with supporting the backbones of our community. That's why the Wisconsin Soybean Marketing Board invests in soy foam for our firefighters. Soy foam TF1122 is the first and only firefighting foam green screen certified at the gold level. As a PFAS-free firefighting foam, it's safe for you and the environment. A safe future for your community. Thanks to your soy checkoff. Learn more at wisoybean.org.
Veltima fungicide out-yields the competition by an average of 7 bushels per acre. But you've never been average. The only competition that really matters is you versus you. And with the performance of Veltima fungicide from BASF, you can take your best results even further. Beat your own record. Get every bushel you deserve. And make this your best season yet with Veltima fungicide from BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
On Monday, the barrel cheese gained 3.5 cents to 181.5. 40-pound block cheese was up 4.25 at 190.25, while AA butter stood still. The March Class 3 milk that goes into cheese is unchanged at 1969. April closed 25 cents stronger at 1947. December new crop corn's unchanged at 471. November beans up a penny right now at 1058. July wheat up a penny at 605 a bushel. I'm Pam Yonke.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Partly cloudy and kind of cold today. We'll get to around 10 for a high this afternoon with wind out of the north at 5, and that'll keep the wind chill hovering either side of zero here for most of the day. Tonight, mostly cloudy, 3 above. Tomorrow, some snow, maybe an inch, with a high near 15. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 6.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
There are solutions to the rot in the Supreme Court, and it's a congressional binding code of ethics. There are solutions to the corruption. It's a constitutional amendment to declare that money isn't speech and corporations aren't people, and we can do this. These are things that Americans agree on no matter our party. We all know that presidents aren't kings.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome former police officer and podcaster Mark Motorson, who will discuss a fun true crime event at the Appleton Historical Society. And our pal film critic Rob Thomas joins the show to talk movies.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Good morning and welcome back to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Dr. Kristen Lyerly here with Greg Bach on the board. We are, of course, Bach in the dock. It's 6:34 on Tuesday, February 11th, and we're listening to Sheryl Crow because it's her 63rd birthday. That's a preview of our history lesson coming up at 6:50. By the way, did you know that Sheryl Crow was a music educator, a public school music educator in her hometown before she made it big? There's a little tie-in there to our next guest, who is a dear friend of mine, and actually he's kind of a big deal here in the state. His name is Andy Weiland. He's the longtime business manager for the Oregon School District. Over 25 years, right, Andy? It's been a long time.
It has been a few years, yes.
Yeah.
It's gone fast.
Yeah, it sure has. Now, you've lived the impact of policy changes on public education through multiple different administrations. You've seen a lot. Last year, you were invited to the White House. You got to speak at the inaugural summit for sustainable and healthy K-12 school buildings and grounds because of your innovative leadership and some of the cool stuff you're doing in your district. You're a community builder. You're a husband, a dad, and a new grandpa. I'm so excited to welcome you to the radio this morning. Welcome to Civic Media Mornings.
Thank you, Kristen. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. So let's just start off with the question that everybody seems to be thinking about right now. The Department of Education, there are a lot of changes that are happening on the federal level, and it seems really scary. You know, here in Wisconsin, we've seen a lot of changes. We've seen a lot of referendums. We've seen a lot of questions about school funding, and that's your bailiwick. What do you think these changes are going to do here in the state and here in our own communities? What can we expect?
Well, I think that's the really big question right now, is there's just so much unknowingness, right? And there's so much fear that's kind of connected to that. For Oregon school districts, for instance, you know, we're talking about a couple million dollars in funding. And it's funding that goes to kind of our most needy students, in that we, a good portion of it goes to, like 88% of that $2 million goes to two main things. One being the students with special needs in our district. So IDEA funding, basically, for them, which is a grant that funds a portion of special education program. And then the USDA program for students of low income. And so free and reduced lunch population, that's a major funding source for those students to make sure that they have the nutrition that they need to be good learners in our schools. So those are the two things that we're worried about. The other 12% in our district doesn't amount to a lot. It does help with students with English as a second language needs, as well as some help for professional development in our school district. But in other districts who quite honestly have larger free and reduced lunch populations, because that's how the money's kind of allocated quite a bit, that's a larger portion of that. So the fear is what impact could that potentially have for those districts that rely more heavily on those revenue sources?
Hey, I really appreciate that perspective, because what we've been hearing and what we heard back in November, a criticism of Tim Walz was that he was feeding the students in Minnesota, all kids get free food. And there's been that movement here in Wisconsin that we're going to feed our students because students who are not fed cannot learn. So to know that these changes at the federal level have the potential to really impact kids' ability to eat so that they can learn, it's really scary.
Yeah, you know, we always talk about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? If you can't take care of those lowest level needs that students, it's really hard to kind of get them to be able to learn geometry or whatever type of thing that you're trying to teach them at that time.
Yeah. So you have been in Oregon, which is a delightful community with a lot of resources, and you've been able to pass referendums when you needed to keep the district on track and support the district. All across the state, we've seen an increase in the number of referendums that districts have had to put up, even for operational expenses, the stuff that keeps the lights on. So from your perspective as the treasurer of WASBO, the Wisconsin Association of School Board Officials, did I get it right?
Business officials. You're close.
Business officials. It's a great acronym, WASBO. How are we doing statewide with school funding, and where do we need to see change?
Yeah. So just some key indicators that we kind of use kind of changed over the last 20 years that provide a little bit of alarm from our perspective and actually kind of explain why we're having so many referendums, which is if you were to take actually even from 08, 09, so 08 was kind of the Great Recession, we've really been detached from a consumer price index increase, for example. And keep in mind that majority of our costs are staff related, right? So these are people that need to have an increase in their earnings in order to just keep up with inflation. If you were to look at that number in the state of Wisconsin without referendums, we're about $3,400 behind in that 20-year gap. So $3,400 per student behind. So depending on how many students you are, the number gets up pretty quickly. Now, keep in mind that is the average compared to in the state of Wisconsin. And some school districts, have passed referendums, so they're doing better as Oregon is. We've been extremely fortunate to have our community support us in ways that increase their property taxes. And we've told them that, and they've still been able to find it in their hearts to kind of continue to prioritize students. But other districts have other situations, different financial things happening in their communities that make that difficult. From a state perspective, we are back in 2002, we were 11th in spending in the state. So average spending, we were the 11th highest, which was actually about 11% higher than other states. So we were spending 11% more per student, and we were ranked 11th in the state of in the United States. In 2022, which is the most recent time that we have data from a United States perspective, we had fallen to 25th, so right in the middle of the pack, and we were actually 7.2% less than the average in the United States of spending per student. So huge disparity, huge change that's happened in our state as far as supporting education. And I'm on the budget side of things, and people talk about, well, whatever your priorities are should be reflected in your budget. And it kind of feels like things have changed in Wisconsin over that 20 years. We've had situations during the pandemic where the state didn't provide any additional resources to us, was kind of shocking, quite honestly. What we were told at the time was that we were getting some federal resources, but what people didn't understand is that those federal resources were finite, right? There were millions of dollars, but they ended. And we were told to basically use those funds to continue to fund our staff members on a reoccurring basis. And so that just didn't work. And so as soon as they told us that, I kind of hit the alarm bell and said, that's going to be a problem. You're going to see districts going to have to go to referendum here in the state of Wisconsin. And for the most part, that is kind of proved out. It's just there's no way that we can do that. The other thing that's kind of unique in Wisconsin, perhaps, is that school districts are funded on a per student basis. So everything's kind of a per student amount. It's called this revenue cap thing, which is a little bit inside baseball. But if we reduce students, we have to reduce in this portion that we would raise a dollar amount for per student. We have to decrease the amount of money that we spend. And that's hard because there are fixed costs associated with working with school districts. There's positions like myself, there's librarians, there's custodians, there's utilities that even if we lose a student or two, that doesn't, you're not able to proportionally reduce costs by that amount. So there's those fixed costs and that creates problems. And over 70% of the schools in Wisconsin are seeing declining populations. That's a demographic thing that's happening. We've seen a reduction in birth rates, really in the country, but in our state as well. And so that's not predicted to change. And so school districts that aren't growing, and in Oregon, again, we've been fortunate. Not only have we had our constituents pass referendums, but we are stable, if not growing a little bit. And that's a great situation. But we have several friends and colleagues that throughout the state that are seeing these decreases in student population. And that's really tough on them because they have to cut not only those perhaps a teacher, if they're so lucky to actually have enough fifth graders, for instance, leave their district that they can actually reduce a staff member, but they have to reduce all those fixed costs associated as well. And that's just an untenable situation that's really difficult to work through.
So I hear you saying that in communities that are aging and shrinking with regards to the number of students in the district, their funding is also shrinking, but their fixed expenses are staying the same. And that puts these districts at a real disadvantage.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, sometimes you get to a point in time where you can close a school. Not the most happy thing to do in a community that would lose a school. Very, very difficult for people to do. But again, that doesn't just happen because you lost 20 kids. But that 20 kids could mean, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars in reductions. And so that's
from a business perspective, what do you think the most pressing issue is that our schools are facing? Is it funding? Is it staffing? Is it morale? There's a lot going on in our school districts right now.
Yeah. Coming out of the pandemic, you know, it has been difficult to keep people upbeat about things. So morale is a thing, but school funding is just something that kind of cuts through it all. And obviously I'm probably biased in this area because this is my, you know, area. You know, there's other things that we're dealing with, you know, trying to decrease the disparity in educational attainment between our different subgroups of our population. Those are things that Wisconsin's known to struggle with, and rightfully so, we need to put more time and energy into that well. But it's really hard to do when you're trying to figure out how you can make the revenues equal to the expenses in a situation where, you know, things are kind of lined up against you. And the other thing I would say is school funding in Wisconsin is complicated. It's not simple. People have a hard time understanding it. Sometimes our legislators even have a hard time understanding it. They will talk about how much money they've put into education, and that confuses the public because this thing called the revenue limit doesn't let you always spend that money. So if you can't spend the money, what it actually does is it provides some tax relief, which isn't a bad thing. It's just doesn't really help the district kind of meet the needs of the students at that time.
Hey, Andy, I'm so grateful to you for taking some time out of your morning to teach us a little bit about how our school districts work. And in our last minute, I'm wondering if listeners are feeling inspired or motivated by what you're talking about, how can they engage and be part of that positive change that we all want to see?
Yeah, I think I would direct you to the Wisconsin Association of School Business Officials website. And there's a link on there called advocacy on the top. Click on that. And there's a bunch of information there. There's some videos, too, that are more public facing. On the link, you're going to find some things that are kind of inside baseball a little bit. But click the link and there's some real nice videos that explain Wisconsin school funding as well as we possibly could.
Wisconsin Association for School Business Officials, WASBO.
WASBO, you just have to be careful because unfortunately we're not all very creative. And so there's other states like Washington that might pop up. So make sure that Wisconsin is in there as well.
Got it. We will have that link in our show notes. I will share it on my socials, Dr. Kristen Lierley, on all the socials. Andy Weiland, business manager for the Oregon School District. Again, thank you so much for joining us and teaching us this morning.
You betcha.
All right. Well, when we come back, we're going to have a history lesson. We've got more Sheryl Crow. We've got, I don't want to tell you too much. I want to tell you when we come back. This is Dr. Kristen Lierley with Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Eagle 1490 AM.
What's your go-to when the cold winds of winter blow? A heavy coat? A hat? For many of us, it's lip stuff, too. But did you know one of the most popular brands, Carmex, the one in the little yellow tube or tub, is a Wisconsin product? It's made in Franklin, a suburb of Milwaukee, and it's shipped to more than 60 countries every year. So can you guess the original use for Carmex? Fixing squeaky doors, actual lip balm, or to soften baseball gloves? The answer coming up. Alfred Woolwig created Carmex in the kitchen of his Dodge County home in Rubicon in 1937. He hand-poured thousands of jars until deciding to automate the manufacturing process in the 70s. Now, can you guess the original use for Carmex when it was created? More than 80 years ago. It's always been meant to be a lip balm, but people use it on other dry or itchy skin areas too. It remains a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. From fighting wildfires with air support, helping civilians in flooded neighborhoods, to delivering food and supplies to those who have lost everything, the Army National Guard always responds when disaster strikes. The Army National Guard also trains to be ever vigilant against threats, foreign and domestic. They protect our skies with missile defense weaponry. They secure our information, communications, and infrastructure with cybersecurity. And they protect us against chemical, biological, and radiological hazards with the civilian support team. The Army National Guard also stands ready to deploy and provide support for conflicts or humanitarian missions abroad. Join the Army National Guard and be there to respond, protect, and support your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX. La Crosse's home for Matt and Air on Air.
I got a feeling of the blues, oh Lord, since my baby said goodbye.
That's Love Sick Blues by Hank Williams, released on this day in 1949. It would go on to later become the Billboard Song of the Year. And oh, how country music has changed.
Yeah. I could have a long conversation about that topic.
You want to bust out a little Florida Georgia Line?
I'd rather not, thank you very much. Here's my problem with that. I don't have a problem with the group. And as your partner Craig said yesterday, he's a fan. That's fine. I have no problem with that. My problem is that the song that I played yesterday for you, like half the lyrics was him rapping, which is once again fine. But then I think about all those people who are like, Beyonce's not country. This isn't country music. I'm like, so some guy rapping over a mandolin is country music? Like, tell me your science. Give me your, show your work, as I always say.
Greg.
Yeah.
It's not about science. You know what it's about.
I know. It's the thing I don't want to say, or we'll get calls, people yelling at me.
Okay, so let's just talk about Sheryl Crow. She's 63 today. We played her earlier. Goodness. I know. So as I mentioned, she was an elementary music school teacher before she got her big break in Michael Jackson's Bad Tour in 1987.
It's crazy.
And I know. And in doing a little research, she's my sorority sister, Kappa Alpha Theta.
What? Would you, like, if you saw her, would you do like a secret handshake or like a high five or a little dance or something?
If I could remember it.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
You know who else's birthday it is today?
Who?
Tammy Baldwin. Senator Tammy Baldwin. Our Tammy.
The same birthday as Sheryl Crow?
And Sarah Palin and Jennifer Aniston.
Nice.
I know. It's a big day.
It's a very big
day. And you know what else happened? You know what else happened today?
What else happened?
At EMI Studios in London, now called Abbey Road, the Beatles recorded 10 songs in one day.
Dang.
And they saved this one for last. I know you're all singing right now.
And
they had to save it for last because they knew that John was going to torch his voice.
Exactly. And I've not been to Abbey Road. I'm a big fan of recording studios. I love recording studios. But I have walked across Abbey Road.
You have?
Yep. And a friend of mine took a picture of me, and she made it so there were four of me walking across Abbey Road.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Was one of you reversed so that your step was out of line like Paul?
No, it wasn't. We didn't get that thoughtful in it. I just walked across quick so I didn't get hit by a car.
This was my first Beatles album. This was, like, I'm a huge Beatles fan, and it was this album that.
For me, in our house, we had the blue and the red records. Those were always in the house. They were on cassette. So the greatest hits of the blue and the red period. That's how I got my intro to the Beatles. My mom and I love the Beatles. We talk about the Beatles a lot.
We need to have a Beatles day.
I don't disagree with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what else happened on this day?
What else happened?
There was another song that I just cherish.
Yeah.
From a recording artist that we know as Weird Al Yankovic.
Really? I've heard of that guy. He's a popular fellow. Let's see. Do I have it here? Oh, here it is.
Uh-huh. This was the best back in 1983 because parody just wasn't a thing.
No.
We thought this was so hilarious.
It was cutting edge humor.
Yeah. You know, Weird Al takes his humor seriously. This is a guy who has 5 Grammy Awards, 4 gold records, 6 platinum records, and he holds a bachelor's degree in architecture from Cal Poly.
He graduated from high school 2 years early as the valedictorian, and he can also boast having Daniel Radcliffe play him in his own biopic.
I know, isn't that wild?
It's wonderful.
Oh my gosh. Other birthdays this morning, Tina Louise, the last surviving survivor of Gilligan's Island, is 91 today. How did she not get that white dress stained? I mean, with all that island living?
She knows how to work it. She knows how to work it.
Yeah, the heels. I don't know. It's Leslie Nielsen's birthday, Burt Reynolds, born in 2018, Thomas Edison's birthday, and George Winston. Love that guy.
George Winston. Who is that?
George Winston, of the piano fame.
Oh.
Okay. He was that famous piano player who would come out with no shoes on.
Oh, yes. I love George Benson, the guitar player. So,
Yeah, there's a tie-in. There's a tie-in later with that. Yeah, you know what else it is? National days. It's National Inventor Day.
Oh,
it's Peppermint Patty Day. Are you a Peppermint Patty guy?
I can do them. I can do a small one, and then I'm good. I can't it's not something like, oh, give me all of them. It's like oh, there's one. I'm good. I'll see you in a month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm the same way. I can pace myself with Peppermint Patties.
Yeah.
It's Shut-In Visitation Day. It's White T-Shirt Day. Don't Cry Over Spilled Milk Day. Always a classic here in the Dairy State. Make a Friend Day. Safer Internet Day, U.S.
Okay. Wasn't yesterday Clean Out Your Computer Day, too? So it's like a computer-themed thing. I don't know. I don't do these days. I'm sorry.
Were you motivated to clean out your computer yesterday?
I try to make sure it's clean just because I don't like when it runs slow. I make it a regular thing to clean it out.
Mm-hmm. Safer internet, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, I agree.
We need more safer internet, especially these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially for the youngins.
Mm-hmm. That's right. All right. Well, in our next hour, because we got to take a little break here, we're going to have meteorologist Brittany Merlot, as usual, to tell us how cold it is in Hayward right now, because the last time I checked, it was minus 21.
Yeah.
We're also going to visit with De Pere School Board candidate and Motherhood for Good ambassador Colleen Nowak. And, nice. You know, in the meantime, this is Dr. Kristen Lierley, Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time. Luke Mathers is on a vacation, so it'll be Tuesday Tangents with you and Aaron Zommers. And headlines of the day, be with us then. And what's worse, we'll see you then.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse. And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. A new front opening in a trade war as President Trump announced 25% tariffs on imports of steel and aluminum.
The American Iron and Steel Institute praising what they say is President Trump's continued commitment to a strong American steel industry. But experts are warning that these tariffs could drive up prices for American consumers.
That's ABC's Mary Bruce. The president in the Oval Office Monday also said Israel should end the ceasefire with Hamas if Hamas does not release all hostages by the weekend. He signed an executive order ordering the release of more documents related to the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. The FBI now says it's discovered 2,400 additional documents that have been previously unrecognized related to the Kennedy assassination. The Justice Department's ordered federal prosecutors in New York to drop their corruption charges against New York City Mayor Eric Adams, saying it would hamper him from helping in immigration crackdowns. This is ABC News.